that worried me. And the map gave me chills because it was far more useful for a false flag bomb scenario than a planning scenario. The reason is that any self-respecting terrorist with a nuke and a boat would take it to the waterfront of the downtown proper, because why not? That's where the maximum physical and psychological effect would occur. But this map showed blowing up something close by, and that would be so handy for creating shock and terror and absolute top-down fascist control. So I'll bring up more on that later, but I want you to remember it. Stay tuned to KBOO Portland and Per Fagring coming up next. Listen to us on 90.7 FM and via the World Wide Web at all the ships at sea.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom, sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, on Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And Saturday, April 4th, is the 47th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis. The details of the assassination, there's lots of, if you really want to find out about the details of this killing, the best book that I know of to read is An Act of State by William Pepper. And William Pepper was an attorney and a friend of Dr. King. And he wrote the definitive book about it. Well, the assassination happened in Memphis. An escaped convict named James Earl Ray was later convicted of the crime. And he died in prison. But after that, there was a confession made by a man named Lloyd Jowers. Now, Lloyd Jowers was a Memphis cafe. He owned this Jim's Cafe, which is in Memphis. It was one block away from the Lorraine Motel, where Dr. King was staying. And it was next door to a rooming house where James Earl Ray had checked in. And Jowers' confession went, basically, was that he had gotten $100,000 from a Memphis produce dealer named Frank Liberto. And apparently the money came from the New Orleans mob, from Carlos Marcello. And Jowers got this money, and his job was to arrange for the assassination. And according to his confession, the shooter, now James Earl Ray, was supposedly, according to the official account, was shooting from one of the upstairs bathroom windows in this rooming house, which looked out over this empty yard to the Lorraine Motel, which is one block away. According to Jowers' confession, the real shooter was sitting in the bushes right outside the back door of his cafe. And he shot Dr. King, handed the rifle to Jowers, who stuck it under a counter and was later picked up by a person from the CIA. The shooter, meanwhile, ran from the backyard, jumped down to the street, and according to some witnesses, was driven away in a police car. Anyway, Jowers made this confession, and he offered to testify in court if he was given immunity. But the Memphis DA would not do that, so Jowers did not testify in any criminal trial. Later on, in 1999, the King family, they came to believe that James Earl Ray was innocent, that he'd been set up. And so they filed a civil lawsuit against Lloyd Jowers in Memphis. And they asked for token $1 damages. So the case actually did go to a trial. Of course, a civil trial is different from a criminal trial. The rules of evidence are a little bit different. But anyway, Jowers got to testify, or his confession was in the court. And the jury ruled that Dr. King was assassinated by a conspiracy. And this is in the newspapers, and that's sort of where it ended. Now, sort of the reason why Dr. King was assassinated was there was two reasons. One was that he'd 1 year before he had made his Riverside Church speech against the war in Vietnam, and he was also planning on a poor people's campaign where poor people from around the country, white and black, would come to Washington, D.C. and camp out on the mall until they got some anti-poverty legislation, which really upset the wheelers and dealers in Washington. So anyway, even after Lloyd Jowers' confession, nothing happened. The perpetrators of the assassination, who we believe to be elements of the CIA and FBI and the Memphis police, and none of them were ever prosecuted or anything. They got away with it. And so it's very interesting that they got away with his assassination, and the killing has largely been ignored. It's a very strange situation where I talk with people who, you know, they believe that King was assassinated by the government, and their reaction is sort of, well, what can you do? And it makes me think of being in a mafia family where everybody knows what Papa, or nobody really wants to know what Papa does for a living. And it's very interesting that the killing, you know, you have to put it in context. Think of the assassination of Dr. King as sort of as part of the assassinations of President John Kennedy and his brother Robert Kennedy. They all happened within 5 years of each other. And President Kennedy was assassinated because he was going to withdraw the troops from Vietnam. He's going to end U.S. participation in that, which he had also fired the CIA chief. Alan Dulles. And this really angered the war hawks in Washington. Even though Kennedy himself was not anti-empire, he just had a different way of creating an empire. He really seemed to believe that the U.S. could compete with the Soviet Union, you know, in a non-warlike, peaceful way. And this is kind of what sealed his fate. Well, that's why President Kennedy was shot. Later on, Robert Kennedy was shot shortly after King, and The reason for that was to cover up the first assassination because Robert Kennedy was running for president and he had just won the California primary. And if he had become president, he was going to reopen the investigation into his brother's assassination. Now, there are three really good books about all this, about the Kennedy assassination. The best one is called JFK and the Unspeakable by James Douglas. About the Robert Kennedy assassination, Brothers by David Talbot. Actually, Brothers, the author David Talbot was interviewed on this show a few years back. And then finally, on the King assassination, An Act of State by William Pepper. So the killing was largely ignored. The perpetrators were not called to justice. They got their war in Vietnam, which we lost. A lot of people say that, well, look at it now. Well, you know, Vietnam is part of the world trading system, and so in a way we won. Well, the answer to that is we could have done that right from the get-go without a war. Vietnam was perfectly willing to be part of the world trade. In fact, Ho Chi Minh, back in the early days of the anti-colonial struggle, he wanted U.S. support against the French, and he also wanted to use the U.S. Constitution as a model for a free Vietnam Constitution. So we could have gotten that without a war, but we did get our war and we lost. And it's been that way ever since. One war after another, the U.S. has lost. We lost the war in Afghanistan. We are in the process of losing it. We are losing the war in Iraq. Every war we've been in since then has been one disaster after another. We see the disasters in Libya. We see a disaster shaping up in Yemen, a disaster shaping up in Ukraine. So basically, these war hawks have gotten their way ever since the King assassination, and they failed totally. But still, they are listened to. They are given due respect for their wisdom and expertise, which is totally crazy. You have to ask, why do the American people sit still for this? It's almost, you know, you can almost think that that somehow, if there is a God of justice, that this God put a curse on the United States for assassinating three of its leaders. Well, yeah, you could say it's a curse. The only trouble with that is that the curse, the pain and suffering from that curse have been mostly borne by, not by Americans, but by the victims of America's wars. So, meanwhile, the perps are doing quite well. They live on, they plan other wars, and they keep, the war party wants war. And it's just for some examples. One example of a war hawk would be a guy named Michael Ledeen, who is a writer and a supposed philosopher and historian, and sometimes he's a consultant for think tanks and things. And he was quoted as saying, to paraphrase, "Every now and then, America has to take some crappy little country and throw them against the wall just to show the world that we mean business." And that is Michael Ledeen's philosophy. And he just came out recently. He's saying that Iran is weaker than we think, that we can go to war with Iran. We can press for tougher sanctions because they will back down. They are weaker. We also have John Bolton. John Bolton is a former UN ambassador. He's that guy with a knobby little chin and the big bushy mustache and a terrible temper. And he just wrote an op-ed that was in the New York Times actually saying we should bomb Iran. Now, Bolton, back in the days of the Vietnam War, he was a student. And he supported the war, but in 1970 he joined the Maryland Guard, and he avoided actually combat. And he justified it by saying, well, it was a good war, but we'd already lost that war by 1970. Of course, while Bolton was in the Maryland State Guard, U.S. troops were going to Vietnam and going to combat for five more years and getting killed, plus all the Vietnamese people who were getting killed. So Bolton is a sort of a good example of sort of the chicken hawk. What they do is kind of like a Wall Street. You know, Wall Street investors have this saying that, well, best thing is to invest with other people's money. That way you can never lose. And so what these war hawks do is they kind of invest in wars with other people's lives. They very rarely risk their own. Dick Cheney, of course, is a great example. He loves war, but he had something like five student deferments when he was a young guy. Also adding to the little outcry for war is none other than Thomas Friedman, who sort of has this undeserved reputation for being some kind of a liberal. And he wrote an article. He was asking, well, maybe we should be arming ISIS, you know, the Islamic State, this band of jihadi terrorists who behead people and everything else. And Friedman is saying that, well, maybe we should be arming these people. Why? Why in heaven's name should we be arming terrorists like Islamic State? Well, it's because we can use them against Iran. Well, this is the kind of crackpot thinking that goes on in Washington these days, apparently. The Iraq War was built on this delusion that that Saddam Hussein had had these weapons of mass destruction. And a lot of people think, well, you know, the war in Iraq went bad sort of from 2003 when we invaded. But you'd have to go back a little further than that. Our dealings with Iraq really kind of began back in 1959. Iraq had a decent ruler. He was a military guy, Abdel Karim Qassem. And he came to power by overthrowing this British-appointed king of Iraq. Iraq once had a king. And Qassem and his people overthrew him. Qassem became the leader of Iraq. And he was a secular kind of a guy. In fact, his own family, I think his father was Sunni and his mother was Shia. So he was not a religious fanatic or anything like that. Well, the U.S. didn't like him. They hired a young thug named Saddam Hussein to take part in an assassination plot against Qassem. Well, that particular plot failed, but later on, the Iraqi Ba'ath Party did succeed in overthrowing Qassem and executing him, I think, on national TV. And, of course, Saddam came to power in Iraq, and he was our ally until they started getting a little uppity around the time of around 1989 or so. So that's when our troubles began in Iraq, and you can see what's happened now. The country is breaking apart. This Islamic State has taken over a large part of the nation, and you know, you'd have to ask, what are these wars for? According to a group at Brown University, the U.S. has spent something like $4 trillion on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. This is the kind of, this is what listening to these Washington warlords gets us. People get killed. America spends money that we really can't afford to spend. And this is the outcome. But still, these people are listened to. It's really kind of amazing. I keep asking myself, why do Americans keep falling for this line? Apparently, ordinary American citizens do not fall for the line as much as we think that they... the polls I have seen show that the American people are much more peacefully inclined than the than their rulers, leaders in Washington. One interesting thing about the war in Iraq was there was a saying among the Bush crowd was that, yeah, we can go fight in Baghdad, but, quote, the real men go to Tehran. In fact, in other words, they saw the Iraq war as a springboard to overthrowing the government of Iran. It didn't work out that way. Not only did we lose the war in Iraq, but the government of Iraq has become allied with the government of Iran, partly because of this Shia divide, Shia-Sunni divide. One thing about Saddam Hussein was that he was a Sunni, and he, a ruthless ruler that he was, he kept the Shia majority kind of powerless. And now that Saddam is gone and they have their own government, they are, some of them at least, are taking their revenge. Well, the upshot of this war, besides the money spent, the lives lost, is that Iran has come out ahead, and now they are actually the they are pursuing the battle against Islamic State with their own Shia militias. We also have this war in Yemen that is this is another kind of a neocon job where what's being ignored is that the U.S. helped overthrow an elected ruler of Ukraine. He may have been a crook, he may have been incompetent, but he was elected, and he was willing to run for election in a few months and be voted out of office, but that was not good enough for our warmongers, so they overthrew him. And Ukraine is kind of an odd country because it's really divided practically down the middle against Ukrainian speakers and Russian speakers. And there's really no reason why the borders should be the way they are. So the upshot of the overthrow of in Ukraine is that Russia took the chance to take back Crimea. And the separatists, who we look down upon or regard as an enemy, are fighting the government of Ukraine. And the Ukrainian government, their economy is really going broke. So this is another result of what these neocon warlords have gotten us into. And still they are listened to with great authority. And now we have this war in Yemen, where the U.S. is bombing the Houthi rebels in Yemen, who are actually about 30 or 40% of the population, and presumably this war is kind of being orchestrated by the Saudi rulers, the Saudi royal family, there's a Saudi crime family, and they see this as part of their ongoing war with Iran. And it's very interesting that one observer has summed up this war to quote him, U.S. praises U.S. ally, namely Saudi Arabia, for bombing U.S.-equipped militias aligned with U.S. foe who is partnering with U.S. to fight another U.S.-equipped militia. In other words, the U.S. seems to be fighting on all sides in this thing. The thing to remember is that that ISIS, the Islamic State, is being opposed by our enemy, supposed enemy, Iran. And then people like Thomas Friedman are saying, well, we should support the Islamic State terrorists against In other words, it's more important to defeat or overthrow the government in Iran, which is what the Iraq War was about all along, than it is to defeat this really bloodthirsty group of terrorists who go around beheading people. Of course, speaking about beheading people, our ally Saudi Arabia does it all the time. There is a place in downtown Riyadh, which is affectionately known as Chop Chop Square, where they have public executions. And I believe they've had more executions in the last year or so than ever before. So this is, you have to keep asking, this is the result of what these Washington warlords have done. And it kind of started with the assassination of President John Kennedy, and it continued with the assassination of Martin Luther King, and it continues to this day. So in a way, you could say that is America under some kind of a curse? Well, not a curse, because America is not suffering the way other countries are, but we're under some kind of an evil spell. That's the only way I can describe it. And we have to ask, well, people do keep asking, why does President Barack Obama go along with this? He was sort of elected as, in the minds of many, he was a sort of a peace president. He wanted to get us out of these wars, and he seems to have made various attempts to get us out of these wars, but he did not succeed. We are keeping our troops in Afghanistan, although I guess the White House says that they will all be gone by the ultimate deadline, which is a couple of years from now. But President Obama keeps giving in to these warlords. Don't forget that these warlords and neocons are in kind of infecting his administration. And you have to ask why. Well, we have one reason why, and this is according to Ray McGovern, who has been a guest on KBOO many times, and a former CIA analyst. And according to Ray McGovern, he was told that Obama was at a dinner party with progressive friends, and they were kind of criticizing him for not living up to his sort of progressive campaign. And Obama got mad and told his friends, "Don't you remember what happened to Martin Luther King Jr.?" In other words, according to Ray McGovern, this is a quote from Ray McGovern, "He's afraid of what happened to Martin Luther King Jr. And I know from a good friend who was there when it happened that at a small dinner with progressive supporters, after these progressive supporters were banging on Obama before the election, 'Why don't you do the things you thought you stood for?' Obama turned sharply and said, quote, 'Don't you remember what happened to Martin Luther King Jr.?'" That's a quote, and it's a very revealing quote. So that gives one reason why Obama has disappointed so many people. You might say that Obama was in favor of the empire all along, which is probably true, but so was JFK, only in a different sort of way from what these Washington warlords demands. So there we are. This is something to think about as we remark on the 47th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. You know, we hear about his dream speech. We hear about his Riverside Church speech. But we should think a little bit about who had him killed, why they had him killed, and why these people, or these maybe not the same people, but the same organizations, are still in power, and why they keep getting us into one war after another. So thank you for listening, and stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
Yes, thank you for listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, 2 minutes before 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Today's former CIA analyst Ray McGovern talks about the nuclear talks with Iran and why Iran distrusts the U.S. Also, did Jerry Brown's executive order for mandatory water restrictions in California let corporate agriculture and oil companies off the hook? And part three of the series, The Battle for Education in the 21st Century. Join us at 11 o'clock on Between the Covers. Today, Sarah Manguso discusses her third book, Ongoingness, The End of a Diary, and how maintaining a diary became a kind of spiritual practice. At 11:30 today on Black Book Talk, author Debrina Jackson Gandy discusses her newest book, The Love Lies, and her work as a transformational speaker, mentor, and personal success coach. That's all coming up right after Air Cascadia, just minutes from now. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre, and that is coming up next. Hey, thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner City Blues Festival, a benefit for Healthcare for All Oregon from the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter at North Lombard in Portland, Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. Hear live performances from such local blues and R&B luminaries as LaRonda Steele, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival live broadcast and show on Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 2nd, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web.